All right. Hi, everybody. This is our CFB Talk 25. My name is Bobby Kyrie, and I will be joined soon by my co-hosts, SRS and JD. So we are here to talk about everything that's going on in college football. We love hearing from you. So if you want to join us, we will be happy to let you up, and we can talk about anything you want in the college football universe as we are now in the off season, in the doldrums, in the lovely, lovely time that is March heading into April, where college basketball tends to take the limelight. So as I've said before, we don't get a green room here. So as my co-hosts join, I send them their co-host request to come and join me up here. But, you know, as we head into it, let's see here. SRS, I just sent you that. And I know JD will be joining us in a moment. If you have things you want to talk about in college football, we'd love to talk to you about it. There you are. Lots of things to talk about, actually. I was kind of looking over the news over the past week since we last joined you all. And one of the things was listening to the issues that Deion Sanders had with people not showing up to his Jackson State Pro Day. I mean, a good number of teams did. I mean, they had, I mean, I want to say it was 20 teams, over 20 teams. Do you catch on to that one, Sirius?
I did not. I did not see that news.
I mean, he got quite a few. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know what he was expecting because the team didn't do that great. I mean, they lost to South Carolina State in their final game. They didn't make the Celebration Bowl. I mean, obviously, Deion's bringing a lot of attention to that program. And I think some of the folks on our CFB that were commenting on it pointed out that, you know, everyone knows Deion Sanders is the head coach of Jackson State. But other than when it comes to players, most people can only name his son and the guy they poached from Florida State in the recruiting in the recruiting fight.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, 20-something teams, that's still a pretty good turnout for a program that's still in its infancy. And, I mean, the guys that he's bringing in some pretty good recruits considering, you know, what HBCUs typically bring in. But it's still early. I mean, those guys aren't going to be ready for a pro day for a few years.
Yeah, and, you know, to their credit, NFL scouts, they do. And I remember actually one of our readers gave us that comment. I think it was Just Keep Living. A lot of these NFL recruits, I mean, scouts, they live their lives looking for players that are being either overlooked or seen that are getting attention. I mean, I think a lot of offensive linemen fall into that category. You know, some of these guys you see, you know, whenever the NFL draft happens, there'll always be some D2 guy I had no idea existed. But apparently the scouts have all noticed them, and then, you know, they go on and have solid career. I think that's back in the day before I started getting really into college football. That's how I would learn about schools I'd never heard of, like Mars Hill and some of these other programs. And it's thanks to some of these scouts out there. I mean, conversely, Cincinnati had 90 NFL coaching staff and personnel in attendance at their pro day. But of course, you know, hey, Cincy had a lot of talent this year, made it to the playoffs. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And by the way, Juwan, we just let you up. You were the first person to send in a request. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, how you fellas doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. On the matter of the Jackson State Pro Day, well, you're coming for me. I watch every level of college football there is out there. So I could probably name you a couple more players on the team that your just average football fan wouldn't notice. But I look at pretty much everyone's roster. I see what the complaint is. I agree with you guys. The level of competition this year wasn't very high. Amongst the division that he was in, they didn't win the Celebration Bowl at all. They made it to the Celebration Bowl, but I think the pinnacle for him is a little bit higher. I think they're trying to make the FCS playoff first because the Celebration Bowl is really – it doesn't mean much to be the champion over there. Now, when you get to the FCS playoff, that's where you gain a little more notoriety if they could get in there and win a couple games because everybody knows who North Dakota State is. It's because of the dominance that they established at the FCS level. to where they're so successful, they have even Division One teams that are fearful of scheduling these guys because they know whenever they play North Dakota State that they're going to have to play their best game or they could possibly lose. The thing I think about with a lot of those FCS players is we don't really look further into it. They have a lot of top 100 players that have been choosing FCS football for a while. I watched the championship game this year of the FCS National Championship, and that quarterback that I believe he plays for Montana, I believe. That guy, I could see him going in the first round. He's a freshman right now, but he has two more years of college football, led Montana to their first FCS playoff game and the national championship appearance in a while. But I think the world should really start tuning in now. What, Travis Hunter and a couple of other players? There's a player named Malachi Wyman that's a receiver over there. When these players are choosing these other programs, they're showing you. And Carson Wentz also, Joe Flacco, we can keep naming guys. You don't have to take that main Division One route to get to the NFL anymore.
And once JD's on in a little bit, he can kind of talk about that too, because he is actually at Brawl of the Wild this past season and got to see the showcase that went on there. But yeah, talking about the Celebration Bowl, I mean, that was the only real primetime event that the Jackson State was in. You know, it was on ABC, and yeah, the 31-10 loss. So if you're trying to attract, NFL eyes to the program, not exactly the best use of your chance to kind of showcase your talent and get guys excited and get some of those players who might be overlooked a little bit more attention going into your pro day.
You know, one of the moments that made me laugh as I was kind of doing review for tonight's show is, and I'm going to come back to it in a moment, but we had one of the more popular discussions was, what is a super dumb fact about your team? And the way it comes into here is one of the readers from Jacksonville State commented, Jacksonville State is number one, not in Florida, and number two, Deion Sanders is not our coach. that one definitely gave me a bit of a chuckle, you know, and I think a lot of people don't even realize or may have missed the news in the off season that Rich Rod is the new coach of Jacksonville State. So that's going to be interesting heading into next season to see how the Gamecocks, and some people probably don't even realize that the Gamecocks, how they do with Rich Rod offense for them. Hey, Adam, by the way, we added you to our circle as well. It's always great to have you and Juwan around. I know, Adam, you've got a lot of coaching background yourself. What are your thoughts right now?
You just mentioned, I have a background in coaching. I was a grad assistant at Alabama A&M the past couple of years. And the big thing with relation to the Celebration Bowl and what you said, Juwan, is – it is for the HBCU circle of FCS teams. It is actually the bigger deal because each team, I think, is guaranteed, a good little payout for making it. And then the winner, I think, makes $1 million. So from a financial standpoint, it's actually more financially responsible to try and make the Celebration Bowl than play in the playoffs. But I will say that what you were saying about, Jackson State and a lot of the other HBCUs are trying to make the FCS playoff just to kind of get that more notoriety and things like that too. So just wanted to kind of clarify that and give some people some understanding of how those things go with the SWAC and the MEAC and all that stuff. Thank you.
I think that's a great point about the payouts too. I mean, a lot of folks may – well, more hardcore college football fans, I think, realize exactly how financially difficult some of these playoffs are for the lower division teams because they don't get as much TV exposure, particularly in the initial rounds. So there isn't a big financial incentive. I know the NCAA even helps teams at certain levels pay for the amount it's going to take to compete in the playoffs in various sports. I remember, it was a while ago. I think it was an NAIA team. Southern Oregon was even raising money to get their team rings after they won the national championship at that level. So I can see why, with the Celebration Bowl offering a solid payout, that is, I think, a big reason why there's incentive to keep that going, even though a fair number of teams, well, not a fair number, but a number of teams have sometimes in those conferences have complained about wanting to play in the playoffs. And I think that perhaps played a big role in NCANT and a few others kind of deciding to move away from it. JD, we let you in. Thanks. Welcome. Our co-host. I know you had a bit of a delay. What's on your mind right now about college football? And again, if anyone else, if you want to join us, just hit the request. We'll let you up and we'd love to hear from you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Longtime listener, first time caller. Overall, though, it's the long part of the college football season, right? Where we're in the off season, we're trying to just wait for, getting through the perseverance of these doldrums and trying to generate any kind of news that comes out. I'm fascinated today by, I think first and foremost, the Pac-12 finally announcing that they're getting rid of that giant albatross of their San Francisco headquarters and going fully remote. We've got that. We've got the Sun Belt finally announcing their divorce from the three programs that are breaking off. There are things that are happening, but again, man, I know that we're going to be saying it even further when we're in May and June, right before the media days actually start to hit. But oh boy, we are scraping the bottom of the barrel when it comes to college football content right now.
Oh, you say that, but I mean, spring game and Japanese college football is coming up, and we're going to be streaming those because they're live. And there's games in Finland. We're really lucky to have someone who's a coach there of the Beaver Hunters sharing this content on those extremely early Saturday mornings.
Definitely a bit of a Dobby is a free elf kind of moment, though, with today's news about the Pac-12 finally getting rid of, as our resident Pac-12 fan described it, the albatross that was that headquarters located in San Francisco. Well, and I think it was actually in Palo Alto, maybe, but in the Bay Area, that was just ridiculously overpriced for what they needed.
It really was. And I'm really interested to see, because when the new commissioner came in, one of his biggest goals was to get out of there. And presumably everybody thought with his Vegas from Las Vegas and his background there working with MGM, I think the natural assumption was going to be that they were eventually going to migrate the Pac-12 headquarters over to Las Vegas. I know that they announced initially today that they were going to go full remote for their working staff. But I'm very curious to see if they actually do end up deciding on going into a new headquarters for the conference in and of itself. I don't know if they want to try to, they like to call themselves the Conference of Champions, one of the innovative conferences, and whether they want to try to stay with the remote work model. But I feel eventually we're going to see a new headquarters for the Pac-12. I'd be very shocked if it's anything but Vegas at this point.
Watch they go in a they surprise us all by spending a fortune on building some just crazy building, like they hire Frank Gehry or someone to design some, some incredible structure. Or frankly, I think it would be hilarious if they tried to do the virtual conference completely. But I think they're not going to do that. They're going to eventually pick a spot. But I agree. I mean, for those who don't realize, they really were paying an enormous sum for real estate that is generally, by Twitter's headquarters, by all of these .com giants. And the reason, that obviously drives rent up everywhere. Previously, I think, were they previously in Oakland? Or am I confusing that? I know sometimes I confuse where the Pac-12 is and where the UC system itself is headquartered. I think they weren't there at least 10 years ago, but I don't know. My age belies me there, so maybe I'm misremembering.
And don't forget, there's always option three that they decide to have a headquarters, but they put it in some just totally asinine spot that makes zero sense. So, like Bakersfield, I hear there's real estate down there.
I was waiting for you to say that. That is where I grew up. I served 15 years in Bakersfield before I escaped. So I'd love to see the Pac-12 suffer like I did and move their headquarters to Bakersfield. But the rents are cheap there, and the land is cheap. Just don't breathe the air.
I am reading it. Oh, go on, Adam.
Okay. As a native Californian myself, I would love them to maybe move the headquarters to a nice, intermediate location, maybe Reno, Nevada, a little bit cheaper than Vegas, still in Nevada. So you cut some costs there and, you know, they can have those coaches meetings on Lake Tahoe in the summer.
Sorry, Adam, the best we can do is prim.
That'll work.
State line, and for those who don't know, that's the state line between Southern California and Vegas. But Reno would be it's funny. The more I thought about it, after you suggested Reno, the more that might actually work. I mean, logistically, may not have as established an airport as obviously, you know, SFO or Las Vegas, but I mean, that is fairly central to the conference.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I mean, if Mike Price got into trouble with a strip club and using the company credit card on it, I would hesitate to think of what someone might get into in Reno.
I mean, Vegas has its own history too now. So
I know, I was about to say, how could you say that about Reno? Vegas.
Certain things are a little bit more legal in Reno. So, you know, it's a little bit different up there, but just looking at an article here, though, to put this in perspective for how ridiculous the San Francisco headquarters was, according to the Sacramento Bee, since 2011, they paid $92 million in rent for the conference headquarters.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't think that the SEC is quite racking up that much in Birmingham.
Yeah, I don't. Well, it's so funny too. I can't imagine Birmingham rents are even close to that. You know, and speaking of, you know, Pac-12 guys, this one is actually John Wilner, who's usually typically writing about the Pac-12 all the time, usually criticizing it with valid criticisms of how it was being run. Actually, I'd love to hear his take on this move. But he made a comment this week trying to talk about the hoops, and we're not going to stay on hoops too long, but he compared the matchup that we're going to get between North Carolina and Duke to Alabama and Auburn whenever they meet. Alabama and Auburn meeting in the CFP semifinal whenever we have Nick Saban's last season. So with obviously Duke, it's the final season for Mike Krzyzewski. I thought that was an interesting comparison. What did you guys think about that?
Odd year Auburn or even year Auburn is my only question.
I was about to say.
Yeah, and I think what that whole comment really just got a lot of Auburn fans happily even imagining that scenario in any way to get get Nick out of Alabama. I don't know him personally. I don't know why I called him Nick. But you know, and again, if you want to join us up here, if you have any things you'd like to say, please just hit the request. We love having guests here on RCFB Talk 25. I'm Bob Ack. I'm joined again by JD, Sirius, and we've got our friends Adam and Juwan up here too. So, Adam, I know you wanted to add something a moment ago.
I did. You know, I also thought, you know, are we talking Auburn, Chizik, or Malzahn? Are they coming back? Because those guys, well, not Chizik, but... Who had the better record as being an Auburn coach? Because I know, you know, I'm now living in Alabama that, you know, as we all know, a month ago, you know, everybody's coming for Harsin's head. So we'd like to see who that might be.
Well, I think the greater question isn't Chizik versus Malzahn. I think the greater question is Malzahn versus any team with Cam Newton.
Well, he did beat Alabama with Bo Nix also. You know what I think is funny? Nobody talks about whenever Alabama beat Georgia National Championship a few years ago, but Auburn was the only team that beat them both. Both Alabama and Georgia that same season.
Mm-hmm. And they still ended up losing to, I believe it was UCF in that Fiesta Bowl. Or Peach Bowl, rather.
Yeah, I remember that. UCF claimed that as their natty that year.
Oh, we
know.
UCF are very aware of that one. Oh, my goodness. We were happy to see the trophy that got slapped together at the last second was still in the sports information, or was athletic director? Yeah, the athletic director's office, which we've talked about that in detail before, but that just made me laugh to think about that.
And then, of course, they paid out the national championship bonus to Scott Frost, who went up to Nebraska and I am sure is replicating the same exact results up in the Big Ten right now.
Hey, Riff's actually been in a coma for the past few years, so just let him have that one.
I don't know. I'm sure they're going to come close to it again this year, and they'll just manage to lose that, fall short by one point or something like that. So one thing I wanted to touch on, and it's funny to say this because for an outsider who isn't as familiar with college football, I don't think they would appreciate why there is so much sort of sorrow or at least some sadness around the loss of the Outback Bowl, because that is apparently changing. The Outback restaurants are not sponsoring it anymore. So it's temporarily defaulted to the Tampa Bay Bowl. And I think people don't realize that, it's been the Outback Bowl since 1996. So it's one of those names that has been there forever. One of my favorite comparisons is someone compared it to being the Staples Center in Los Angeles. I guess now it's called Crypto or something. But I mean, Staples was the original sponsor of that. My favorite was actually the previous arena that the Lakers played in, the Great Western Forum. It was originally, and now, it was called the Forum, but Great Western was a financial institution. But the name worked so perfectly that everyone just, if you had no idea who they were, you just sound, the Great Western Forum. That totally makes sense. The Lakers would totally play in Los Angeles in the Great Western Forum. So I think the Outback Bowl, even though it doesn't quite fit Tampa, like Outback, but that one's a bit of a loss. What do you guys think of that?
Texas Roadhouse also has a Bloomin' Onion-esque appetizer, so I really think they just need to kind of swoop in and grab the naming rights for that bowl game. For minimal disruption for college football fans.
As if an Australian name wasn't more confusing, let's just go straight up call the Texas the Texas Roadhouse Bowl.
I was going to suggest that Outback was kind of realizing that they were making less money on selling seats and losing more money selling steaks or Bloomin' Onions, so it kind of just became irrelevant at that point.
That is going to be a great question of whether our nation is going to heal over the idea of paying full price for our coconut shrimp or our Bloomin' Onions after the following of our future January 2nds going here on out, not being able to determine, our SEC team or a Big Ten team winning to determine what kind of free appetizer we deserve as a country. And I, for one, am sad that this discourse has been lost.
I agree.
One thing I got to say, I'm curious to see who replaces him, but also I wonder if Outback decided there's an opportunity to perhaps get a different bowl. I mean, I remember when Buffalo Wild Wings swapped some bowls a few years ago, they kind of went up the pecking order. They had the secondary bowl in the Phoenix area, and then they moved over to one of the Orlando bowls. And I remember that was actually related to the CFP. And it's kind of an interesting situation. I had a friend at the time who worked at Buffalo Wild Wings. And the introduction of the CFP devalued some of the other bowls because suddenly, everyone wanted to be a part of the New Year's Six. And those bowls seemed a little more attractive. So bowl payouts dropped quite a bit there. And in that regard, it gave Buffalo Wild Wings a chance to get more bang for their buck. So they were able to swoop in and grab one of those Orlando bowls. But hey, we've got another speaker, little Smitty. Woke him up. What are your thoughts?
So I'm a big old Sooner fan. We always like to kind of give a little kick on Austin. I think it was last year the Buffalo Bills were talking about maybe moving the franchise to Austin, and I'll tell you what, that kicked up more feathers than a goose falling on a duck blind. I think it'd be awesome if Texas Roadhouse would have their bowl down in Austin, because that would kind of make all those folks down there in Austin pretty darn happy.
Go ahead, JD.
Oh, I was about to say, I know that it had been rumored a couple years ago when they were looking at bowl expansion. I know Myrtle Beach and Austin, Texas were two very, very popular destinations for them to go ahead and move into a bowl expansion. Ultimately, the one in Austin never came through. But one of the things that I think is certainly interesting, at least for Texas Roadhouse, if we're going to talk about, you know, where we're going to put them, first and foremost, I'm delighted with the idea of the Texas Roadhouse Armed Forces Bowl, just for the sheer, you know, ridiculous juxtaposition of putting those two together. But one of the other things that also still just completely drives me crazy is Texas Roadhouse, you know, is known for being a Texas institution. It's this, you know, Texas cuisine, so on and so forth. They're not even based in Texas. Like, they're actually based out in Louisville, Kentucky, of all places. So for me, you know, my dream situation for Texas Roadhouse might even be, you know, put them in a bowl game where they play the Kentucky Derby.
If we want an authentic restaurant chain to be the sponsor of a bowl in Austin, I think that the only choice is California Pizza Kitchen.
Amen.
We're just creating chaos one bowl game at a time, clearly.
You know, I honestly think Texas Roadhouse should move the bowl game to what's that place, and was it Amarillo or wherever that is in Texas that has that 72-ounce steak challenge?
Yes, that's Amarillo.
That's
yep,
where
the Big Texan. The Big Texan in Amarillo.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, hey,
that could make for a fun pregame competition there for the teams, you know.
Oh, you get a couple of linemen trying to eat that? Game over.
Be like a Lowry's Beef Bowl kind of thing, you know. I mean, before the Rose Bowl, that's been a tradition forever. So I think there's something going there. I think mm-hmm. it's done.
I want to see them actually take that and convert it into an on-field advantage on game day too.
How so?
I don't know. I mean, like, you forget the coin toss. Whoever wins the steak challenge or the beef challenge is the one who gets to win the coin toss and gets to pick field position and everything.
Put your largest and biggest offensive lineman at midfield. The first one to finish the 72-ounce steak gets the ball first.
There we go. Do it on game day.
Needs to be played on grass, because that's a lot of, you know, future vomit that'll be coming up.
Oh man, I love it, and that, you know, it's so weird, but that would be perfect for a non, you know, playoff bowl game. I mean, the same reason that I think the Mayo Dump worked for the Duke's Mayo Bowl. It's, you know, it's a silly game, you know, everyone's enjoying it, but you can't take it seriously. It's really just a classic bonus game for two teams, and the coaches obviously bought into it. I mean, I like these kinds of silly kind of additions. I mean, I'd obviously eating a whole steak that size, 72 ounces right before a game may not quite work, but I think that's great. I think more bowl games should embrace the silliness of it. And, you know, clearly Duke's Mayo proved that you can make it work.
And thanks for tuning in. This is CFB Talk 25, and that was our contractually mandated weekly reference to Shane Beamer.
Hey, John, I noticed we let you up here. We'd love to hear from you as well. And feel free to stay up, Little Schmitty. That's totally fine.
Hey, everybody. I just saw the news that Bryant was moving out of the NEC down at the FCS level, moving to the Big South. And, you know, I don't follow that level of football that much, but it made me think that the move is based on their basketball and their other sports. And I'm just wondering, now that the NCAA tournament is over, do you think we'll see more smaller schools like that kind of jump around in this constant realignment era we're in?
I think that's definitely going to be the case, especially seeing where Conference USA is. We saw a bunch of schools finally get that divorce finalized, where they're losing some of their big players. They're losing Marshall. They're losing ODU. They're losing Southern Miss. And they're going to see a bunch of future teams move out as well. We've already seen that New Mexico State, Liberty, all these other teams are kind of joining into the fray with Conference USA. And I think as we continue to see a migration and shift, we're going to continue to see some kind of team moving up. We've already seen James Madison move up from FCS. They're heading into the Sun Belt in the very near future. And I think especially when we see the changes that we see at Bryant going into a new conference, as you mentioned, the basketball is so strong there as a tradition. They have opportunity out there. Sam Houston State is going to be making a move because of their football as well. I think this is going to be the very start of what we're going to see for realignment over the next couple of years, especially as we see other teams getting stronger, as we see other conferences getting stronger. Other conferences have to end up backfilling. So, you know, we saw Texas and Oklahoma, they moved to the SEC. The Big 12 had to bring in a lot of people. We saw the American, they backfilled. Then we saw the smaller conferences, the Sun Belts, the CUSAs try to scramble and backfill that as well. Eventually, they're just going to start running out of Division I schools. And I think, you know, this is going to be the start of – I think we're going to see a couple of teams that have done really well in FCS kind of follow that James Madison example and actually move up into a higher competition in order to just backfill the positions that are now open in Division I. I think you're kind of spot on with the idea – that Bryant, you know, took on this new position for their new conference. And I don't think that they're going to be the last ones by any means either.
And this there's also a little bit of other things going on with Bryant, because Bryant is, you're right, they're going to be able to compete even a little bit stronger, because as I recall, the Northeast Conference, the NEC, is still an FCS conference that, while it offers scholarships, limits them somewhat. I don't believe they offer the full amount of scholarships per team, and that's just something all the teams agreed to. And historically, there were a couple of conferences that were in that same boat, unlike the obvious extreme exceptions are the Ivy League and the Pioneer Football League, which don't offer scholarships at all, at least not athletic scholarships. They oftentimes will come up with academic ways to make up for that. But I know there was kind of a conference sort of shift there. The Big South, I mean, because they're moving football to Big South, and Big South is happy to take any football programs at this point, because they lost a few with the current shuffle. Because with James Madison moving out of the Colonial Athletic to move up to FBS, they started poaching teams at the Colonial, including, I believe, a couple, at least two teams, I think, from the Big South are moving over there. So they wanted to get another team in, so Bryant was happy to do that. And then move their basketball program to a conference, America East, that just lost a couple of teams as well. I think they lost Stony Brook, who is moving to be a full member of the Colonial Athletic Association. And Hartford is moving down to D3. It's dropping scholarships altogether. So I believe, you know, this is kind of what those conference shifts. And it's funny, too, you can blame, you know, FBS for all of this. I mean, everyone wants to have the big FBS football money. And so you have a team like James Madison leaving the Colonial Athletic Association, and then we start to see the ripple effects. And all of these ripple effects have hit Bryant, which has seen an opportunity in their view to move both in football and for all of the other sports in a way that they feel will be more advantageous. But that's an unexpected question. I'm kind of glad we got to talk about that one. What is your take on all of this, John?
I was just thinking that's going to be very interesting for schools at the very lower level of, like, you know, how large they are with an enrollment. Are probably, even if they have a football program, I think they're going to have to start thinking about realigning themselves to the best basketball conference they can get themselves into, because the two money sports, and, you know, football being the greatest, but basketball being behind it, is what's probably going to power a lot of their athletic departments going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I don't think a lot of people realize how much money those two sports can make. And I think once you get to these lower divisions, the basketball money is probably going to be bigger. I mean, not even lower divisions, but we're talking FCS versus FBS programs. I've never seen that broken down. I'd be really curious how that works. I can definitely foresee some of these FCS programs with really strong D1 basketball being a part of that, like Villanova. I mean, there's a great example. I would be shocked if Villanova basketball didn't make more than, you know, FCS football at Villanova or several others. The one sport that still shocks me that does not quite make the money that you'd expect is men's hockey. I think it's growing, but I remember like 5 years ago, there were only two teams that were, I think, regularly in the black when it came to college hockey, and that was University of Minnesota, the main campus on the Twin Cities, and the University of North Dakota, who happen to be rivals. I think others will probably eventually catch that, because I think that's one of those sports that's getting a little more emphasis. Maybe it'll be the third moneymaker, but it'll still be dwarfed by an order of magnitude by college football and college basketball. But it would be interesting to see where that goes.
Thinking back to some of the reports that I've seen, it definitely, you know, really comes down to the attendance and whether or not teams can pack their arenas or stadiums or ballparks, depending on the sport. So, yeah, football, of course, because you can generate a lot of attendance in a few games for most schools. And then, like you mentioned, men's basketball, at least the FBS division, and sometimes at the lower divisions, it can flip once you get smaller football attendance. But even at some of the big blue bloods, I remember part of the reason for why Joker Phillips got canned at Kentucky years ago was because he was actually the poor performance of his football teams was driving down UK athletic revenue to the point where it was impacting their basketball program. Because as successful as the basketball program was, they still needed that bulk infusion of cash coming in from football, from the concessions and the revenue from ticket sales, to generate money for that overall program. And it was putting too much of a strain on basketball, and basketball alone couldn't carry the load for them. So that was part of the reason for why they made the regime change. And then beyond that, you get into like the niche programs. So obviously like Connecticut, Tennessee, places like that, that have strong women's basketball programs, men's hockey in a few places that you mentioned, baseball, for like the LSUs, the Mississippi States, the strong programs with huge turnouts that sell out every single game, basically. And then it's super, super niche after that. And it's like, you know, one or two programs where you maybe have like a men's wrestling or something that's positive cash flow. But yeah, definitely for most of these programs, I think a lot of fans don't realize just how much of the budget is carried by one, maybe two, occasionally three sports for everything that they offer.
Yeah, that's crazy. Vanderbilt's definitely a dying program. Can't say that for myself. I'm a Coastal Carolina fan. We're on the up and up. Shit's looking up bright. We got Grayson McCall right now, and then we're going to go to Bryce Archie. We should be in the top 25 for the next 10 to 15 years at Chadwell.
I think there's a lot of positive things to say about Chadwell. I think he is definitely, if he stays there, obviously Joe Moglia built a really strong base for him to work with, and those kind of health problems really did finally creep up on him a little too far, and he's smart about his life and being healthy, so credit to him. But Chadwell just took the ball and ran with it. I mean, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you just go down his staff. I think eventually we're probably going to lose Willie Korn at some point. I mean, he's just a great X's and O's guy, a guy you want on your offense. He's just – their offense is different down there.
Absolutely. Hey, and Liddy, I saw you – your audio is so soft, we didn't actually hear you when you started talking. And I think that caused a little bit of confusion. Did you want to add something to this?
Yeah, no problem. Sorry, I'm in actually in between driving between Dallas and Abilene, Texas. Seems to always fall the potholes. There's more potholes here than there are classes on Panama City in spring break. So what y'all bring a good point, you know, as far as these programs going on the up and up, and from the FCS to the FBS. You know, it started out with Boise State, and then from there UCF, and now Cincinnati, who was finally the one token everyone's been looking for the underdogs to finally come into the FBS. And on top of that, you look at these teams coming into the Big 12 when Oklahoma and Texas are leaving. We're about to see probably one of the greatest conference alignment shifts that are, honestly, might be better than Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. You got Cincinnati and Houston. And Houston is, they're kind of an underdog a little bit out here in the South, but, you know, I grew up outside of Houston in a little town called Katy. I'm with Andy Dalton. But you look at all these programs on the up and up, and not just football. You know, you look at Coastal Carolina, who came to the Final Four in that lower tournament in basketball, and all these teams that we didn't really think much of, or as we call it, directional schools, that are really starting to make the up and up. I think, you know, once you get not just football on the up and up, but, you know, the, all these other athletic programs, you're going to see Big 12 with teams such as, like, you know, I've always been hoping Iowa would join Iowa State in there, but I think it's going to go vice versa. I could see Iowa State going to Big 10. Like, yeah, with all the conference realignments, not just on the top level, but the bottom level, I think in the next 5 years, we're going to see teams in large, the Power Five conferences that we never even imagined 10 years ago.
You really think Iowa State could maybe go to the Big Ten? I don't really know that area too well, but I'm a Maryland Hoops fan, so I peek into the Big Ten pretty frequently.
Be a perfect geographical location.
I could honestly see both Kansas and Iowa State going to the Big Ten because they have such high academic levels. The Big Ten is just like the ACC; they're very big.
Oh yeah, they've definitely valued the academics. They're big.
Yeah, one thing I will say. I don't think you'd ever see, and this is, I think the time of taking both Iowa and Iowa State, that was something that might have happened 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but something we saw, especially when the Pac-12 and Big Ten expanded in that round where they took, you know, Colorado, Utah, and then, you know, Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska, and, you know, all of those moves, we saw that they love to go into a new area because they're making these calls as much for TV as anything. Now, obviously, the SEC already had a Texas team, but Texas is a huge brand, so, you know, that's in its own other universe. I would put it up there with, like, you know, Notre Dame or a school that's just going to pull a ton of viewers, no matter who else is in the conference, even if it's the same area. But I think Iowa State and Iowa will never probably go together anywhere because of the fact that, well, you already have a team that's bringing in the Iowa market. That's how they're going to think. They're not going to think – they know the hardcore fans of Iowa State or the hardcore fans of Iowa may not watch each other, but they know – they're hoping they're going to get that neutral –
it's kind of like a Clemson – like a Clemson-South Carolina kind of deal. Like they would never be in the same conference.
Yeah, and it's so funny too because they were until South Carolina got poached by the SEC a long time ago, and I think that's why I think part of the reason why the SEC is more of been a forward-thinking conference in a lot of ways, at least with the money part. They know the money game. That's no one can doubt that. That's just unassailable at this point.
There's also the ledge.
Texas has their own network. I mean, no one else with the SEC has their own network.
We'll see how long the Longhorn Network lasts.
Texas
has
they've got their own network.
The extension is going up.
Yeah, I think that the SEC network's just going to.
They won the women's swimming national title one time. My bad.
Yeah, SEC network's probably just going to absorb all of that. As long as we get the Bevo Christmas, then, I mean, really, who's going to complain? But supposedly in the SEC, there's the gentleman's agreement from the schools like Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, that they wouldn't add another school in their state, that they would all vote together against admitting one. Don't know how much that would actually carry. You know, if it comes down and ESPN's willing to offer hundreds of millions of dollars more on the contracts, then maybe that would be enough to kind of get them to switch sides. But that's always been the rumor. But, you know, speaking of money, today – Navigate put out a P5 average payout estimate from this year going out to 2029, assuming a 12-team college football playoff expansion and all of the new media deals that are already on the books. And they projected both the Big Ten and the SEC at over $100 million per school by 2029, with the Pac-12, ACC, and Big 12 ranging from $57 to $62 million.
Jeez.
Big numbers.
I mean,
they've got to be counting on the Big Ten and SEC having more than one team in every single year. That's why their money's going to be more than the other conferences. I wonder, have we all fallen under the stigma that the Big Ten and the SEC is that much better than everybody? Yeah, because just my opinion, Georgia should have never been in the playoff after that SEC championship loss.
I actually think the big driver on this is just new media deals. with the SEC switching from CBS, which was a drastically undervalued contract, to ESPN for that marquee Saturday game. That's going to be an extra few hundred million dollars a year, which single-handedly is going to shift them back up above the Big Ten's current payout on a per-school basis, and then adding in Texas and Oklahoma to it. So that's, I think, where you're going to see the gap come in of, you know, almost $20 million per school between SEC and Big Ten. And then, of course, the Big Ten is already right now at the top of payouts per school because of their media deals. So I think that really that's the big driver. I mean, it's they're starting with a $15 million gap between second and third place in 2022, and it's just going to get bigger because they've got more savvy and more appealing media deals, and they've got their own networks.
Hey, don't forget ACC is tied into that horribly long, low-paying deal that they're in right now.
Hey, John, I'm so sorry I talked over you. I'm just doing a little air traffic control here. Dickie, I know you were trying to speak a little earlier, and then let's shift to Adam, and then we can come back to you, John.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to get your guys' mindset, like just some neutral, like a neutral fan base, kind of like you don't have that Sun Belt bias. Like, who do you guys really think might win the Sun Belt next year between like Coastal, App State, Marshall? We're adding all these new teams. It's going to be exciting G5 football. Who do you guys really think is going to take it? And kind of like, what do you guys think of Grayson McCall, honestly, on a national level?
I think immediately when I look at the Sun Belt going forward, for next year, it's really, really hard to bet against a veteran quarterback and a coach that has continued to stay with his system. You cannot speak enough to the cohesion that they've had for playing football for so many years together. They know the system inside and out. They have the continued reps at offensive line. They have the continued reps together with a coaching staff. I think Coastal Carolina is going to be that favorite to go to, especially with the fact that Louisiana is going to have to rebuild with Billy Napier taking out on the Florida job. I'm very interested to see, though, in at least the change up on it with James Madison getting more scholarship players eventually added on. I'm really curious to see how they transition from this consistent FCS championship program that was often going to Frisco, that was often going deep in the FCS playoffs, and how that translates when they actually play an FBS schedule on a regular and routine basis. It's really hard for me to bet against Coastal Carolina heading into this year, but I think for me, at least in terms of storylines that I'm looking to, and some of that I would say that I'm very intrigued to see where they stack up in the championship run, is going to be James Madison.
Yeah, definitely. Like, as a fan, I feel like JMU and Marshall, especially, like, just those two schools coming in are going to be a real not like culture shock, but it's going to be interesting.
I feel we definitely got an extra year there to see how this goes out for some of these other programs, because I still can't believe Clay Helton's at Georgia Southern.
It's unbelievable. No, I guess no more triple option for them.
Yeah, no. But, you know, hopefully I'm curious to see how that plays out. And App State, you always got to look out for them. I mean, we can't not mention it. Certainly the East seems to be the stronger division at this point.
I'm taking the Arkansas State Red Wolves.
You know, Arkansas State under Butch Jones taking that big of a turnaround this year?
I just like the moves they're making in the transfer portal. They got a couple guys from Alabama to help King Makuta to help strengthen up the defense. They're making some moves. I just want to see what they're going to do.
Arkansas State last year really wasn't too bad. They just, in a lot of games, they made a lot of dumb decisions and like turnovers, stuff like that, kind of bit them in the butt. I think Southern Miss is probably going to win that division, though.
From past experience, trusting Butch Jones's recruiting to be a harbinger of how they're going to do in the seasons, that's a risky move.
Hey, Adam, I know you wanted to add into this. What did you want to? We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, where to start? First off, I was going to say, as far as the Sun Belt goes, definitely would have to agree with Dickie that, you know, and what you said with Coastal being the favorite, they got their quarterback back. They got that. They got everything rolling there. They're doing very well. I'm happy for them. You know, while I was at Alabama A&M. We had a Coastal Carolina transfer running back, great kid, well disciplined, you know, good hard worker. So I can definitely understand what kind of things they're doing around there. But you got to keep it up for App State and the rest of that Sun Belt crew. And I think in the future, you would like to see 5-6 teams competing and doing really well. You know, and I'll say this to kind of finish out my statement on what we're talking about at the moment. And if I can remember out what we were talking about earlier, I had something, but I forgot it. But, you know, a Georgia Southern, Marshall being another one that's also on the move and moving up. And there's going to be a good conference there, I think, with football in the group of six, group of five, however you want to call it. And then you also have, you know, your other outside the lines schools, but definitely I'm kind of rooting for Coastal and what they're doing right now.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that. We got a big game against App State at home this year on a Thursday night, so it should be on ESPN. It's going to be a good one.
I cannot wait to get back to midweek college football, that's for sure. Hey, John, I know you wanted to add some thoughts, too. And I, as we keep moving along on these topics, sometimes I forget what we were even talking about earlier. I'm perfect for radio. Just completely vapid mind, goldfish memory.
No worries. I was just going to add in to when we're talking about the contracts, the TV deals, and the money that we're seeing, the huge jump for SEC and for the Big Ten, that, you know, we got to remember ACC is just hamstrung with that awful contract that they have that I think goes out to like 2035 or something like that. So if they don't do something fast, they're going to get left behind in the weeds with the Big 12 in terms of money real fast.
You know, they had a perfect chance to break that contract and force a renegotiation by demanding that Notre Dame actually join them in 2020 during the pandemic year. And they just let that go by the wayside. You know, they had them by the ear and could have forced them to do it. I mean, they actually got a cut of the NBC money from Notre Dame. So that was probably the single best chance anybody's had of getting Notre Dame to join a conference. And if they had, then obviously contracts would have had to been renegotiated because of everything that would entail. Just like, you know, Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC, it's going to put all those back up for renegotiation as well. So just another misstep on the ACC side.
Yeah, it always seems like the ACC thinks they're going to sweet talk Notre Dame in since they took the rest of their sports, and not realizing that NBC money, if they come up with a big contract for football again, Notre Dame probably still won't jump to the ACC.
Hey Adam, did you want to add something?
Yes, and I'm glad John brought this up. But with the SEC and what we're specifically talking about right now with Notre Dame and the ACC, you know, I would agree with what was just said that the ACC could have definitely forced the hand. Especially, I mean, they already have the rest of the Notre Dame athletics. Why not gain football? And that could have potentially put NBC in a better position to try and maybe get some ACC network coverage. If you know, I don't know, the ACC has their network and all that, but you know, I think Notre Dame being the school it is could have potentially brought some bargaining chips and some money talk to it. But again, what I was going to say is, you know, I think what's going to happen is in the SEC, you have Texas and Oklahoma. Obviously, the money that goes on there, you know, the Longhorn Network might be like a become ESPN +++. You know, it's not going to be the Longhorn Network anymore. It's just going to be a part of ESPN. Having the deal that they have, it's just going to be a part of it. So I think all those SEC schools, where they're going to really win is now all their fan bases throughout the world can just purchase, you know, an ESPN subscription specifically for that team. And all that money goes to, or part of that money goes to the school, and it's just more money, more problems.
I think negotiating the future of streaming is probably going to be the biggest question moving forward, just because, you know, right now it's kind of the heyday. Everybody's throwing money around left and right, but, you know, eventually the market shift is going to happen with cable cutting and streaming, and they're going to kind of equalize or something.
I'm sorry to cut off. I feel like at the end of the day, the SEC is going to kind of fall off with Florida getting Napier and all. Like, I feel like he was a really bad signing. He dominated a bad Sun Belt West for a while. I feel like Florida's kind of a dying school in general. It's just like in all athletic programs.
You do know they won the SEC East last year before Georgia just won it, right?
Yeah, but they fired the coach that won it.
Billy Napier, he's a big upgrade from Dan Mullins. Look, LSU, they fouled out on that hire so bad. I would have taken Billy Napier because he took with him over to Florida, Corey Raymond.
No, you would take Billy Napier over Brian Kelly?
No, listen, no, let me explain why. This is why I would take Billy Napier over Brian Kelly right now. Yes, Billy Napier has worked himself up, but he served under Saban for a number of years, just sitting back and learning how to run a program, how to run a proper organization. You're not going to really get too much headlines with him. He's a quiet coach, and all he's been doing on this recruiting trail lately is reeling in guys. And not only that, he brought over Corey Raymond from LSU, who was responsible for any of your favorite defensive backs who played for the LSU Fighting Tigers, you name it. So he also knew the landscape of Louisiana, also being a coach down in Louisiana for so long. He knew what regions to go, which if you look at LSU right now, Brian Kelly's having a hard time just adjusting to the southern part of the United States, just the whole Louisiana lifestyle down there. I was looking at an LSU insider, him and Kayshawn Boutte, who is LSU's best player, aren't on good terms. He says the most that he knows about his star player, Kayshawn Boutte, is his last name. Other than that, he hasn't really been around the facility. Now, he's recovering from a foot surgery right now. But if you ask me, man, I'll take Billy Napier any day. He's going to turn that Florida program around. Dan Mullen didn't leave the cupboard bare over there. He has a lot of good athletes. When you go look at Florida's roster, Anthony Richardson, that's not a bad quarterback to have in your first year of playing college football. Let me ask you this. Would you take Anthony Richardson or Stetson Bennett? And I love Stetson Bennett. I don't know why everybody craps on him. Everybody craps on Stetson Bennett like he doesn't have
him. I'm going to take the guy that already won a national championship.
Right. Well, so you'll take Greg McElroy?
Yeah. At that point, he's already proven.
He's a good game manager. But I just think Florida's in for a renaissance, man. Look for that program to start reeling in more of those Florida recruits that everybody comes in and poaches out of Florida every single year.
I just think that he brought a Sun Belt – and listen, I'm a Sun Belt football – I'm a Coastal fan, but I think he brought a Sun Belt staff with him to the SEC, and it's going to bite him in the butt.
Well, you gotta go. Something fun to see next week, I think. And I apologize, guys. It's been about an hour. We tend to wrap up after about an hour. We try to be a little more dedicated about that. I love this conversation. Actually, I was commenting to somebody on the side. I'm like, I wish we weren't sticking so close to the hour on this. But we want to go ahead and wrap up. I just want to thank all of you all who have come to listen to us, to join us, and participate in the RCFB talk. We enjoy hearing from all of you. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Dickie. Thank you, John. Thank you,
Juan. Good times, guys. Sean's up, baby. Let's go. Sun Belt Championship. Note, we're going to the ship, baby. The shot declares.
So on that lighter note, I just want to thank all of you. One of the funnier moments I read is somebody – try to come up with something that could be said as a joke with a college football coach's Twitter account. And someone thought Jim Mora should tweet, "I killed Tupac," which if you know where that joke came from. But now all I'm thinking is, would Will Smith then go and punch him? But anyway, sorry, that was a really lame joke. On behalf of JD, on behalf of Sirius and all of us, thank you for joining us. We'll be back next Tuesday night. Stay well out there.